In Job chapter 32, where we begin today, we are introduced to another character that we did not realize was listening in on all of these conversations that we've been looking over for the last few days. His name is Elihu, which in Hebrew means my God, or he is my God. And so this person seems to be related to the Abrahamic family. Let's go ahead and read till we can get to his genealogy, and then we'll talk more about it. Job 32, 1, so these three men ceased to answer Job because he was righteous in his own eyes. So the three friends that we have already met have given up. They have tried repeatedly to force Job to acknowledge he is a sinner that is receiving due punishment for his sins because of all the tragedies that have happened in his life. So they have not been able to fulfill their goal of getting him to repent, and they give up. Well, we discover there is a younger man nearby that might have come with them, seems to have come with them, but because he is not the same age, he really isn't accounted as part of their group. This is the genealogy for him. Verse 2, then Elihu, the son of Barachel, the Buzite of the family of Ram, burned with anger. Now, this name Buz or Buzite may be related to the genealogy we see in Genesis 22 of Nahor. Abraham got a report when he was already in the Promised Land for a while that his brother Nahor was raising a family. His firstborn son was Uz. His second son was Buz. Perhaps they were twins. And Kemuel was the third son who becomes the father of Aram. And so as soon as we see the name Aram there, it's likely that that is the source of the Arameans, or the Syrians, that come into existence as an ethnic group later. So it's just as possible that the brother Buz became the father of the Buzites, and maybe they end up settling in the eastern lands, that'd be east of the Jordan Valley region, where this story in Job is taking place. So if that is the case, if this is the genealogical tie-in, then we have another person in the story of Job that is related to Abraham. He is a distant nephew by many generations. Verse number 2 also said that this guy was burning with anger. His nose is hot, as the idiom goes. He is infuriated by what he's heard. And he's not infuriated for the same reason we're mad. Because we are angry, and rightfully so, that Job is being falsely accused by his friends based on a faulty philosophy that bad things only happen to bad people. And since such bad things happen to Job, he must be a horrendous person. No, Elihu is upset for a different reason. Verse 2 says, he burned with anger at Job because he justified himself rather than God. He is also mad that Job is not cracking under the obvious pressure that God is putting him under, to repent of his sin. So this guy thinks that he can accomplish what his three older persons in the room couldn't. Verse 3, he burned with anger also at Job's three friends because they had found no answer, although they had declared Job to be in the wrong. So he is a young hotshot who thinks he can crack Job. Verse 4, now Elihu had waited to speak to Job because they were older than he. And that's the reason why I said he is the junior of them and might explain why he was not counted as one of the three friends earlier. When Elihu saw that there was no answer in the mouth of these three men, he burned with anger. And Elihu, the son of Barachel, the Buzite, answered and said, I am young in years, and you are aged. Therefore I was timid and afraid to declare my opinion to you. I said, let days speak, and many years teach wisdom. So he felt that because he was younger, he should let the old guys take care of the problem. Verse 8, but it is the spirit in man, the breath of Shaddai, the Almighty, that makes him understand. So it's the life force that God has given us as a gift that can lead to understanding. And there is some truth to that. And we need to acknowledge once again, as we go through here, that Elihu is going to say some things that might be partially correct, but he is applying it improperly in Job's case and making assumptions that he should not have made. So here he is correct. We have the life gift from God that can lead to us being filled with his wisdom. Remember, it's the fear of the Lord that is the beginning of wisdom. So that's available there. And so he is correct when he says, you know what? It's not old age that makes a person wise. It's attending to God that can make one wise. Verse 9, it is not the old who are wise, nor the aged who understand what is right. Therefore I say, listen to me. Let me also declare my opinion. Behold, I waited on your words, or for your words. I listened for your wise sayings while you searched out what to say. I gave you my attention, and behold, there was none among you who refuted Job or who answered his words. So now he's chewing them out. He says, I sat here quiet. I deferred to you because you were older than me, and I thought you'd be able to handle it because of your age, but obviously you can't because you didn't get him to crack. You didn't get him to acknowledge that he's in the wrong. Verse 13, beware lest you say, we have found wisdom. God may vanquish him, not a man. So he kind of anticipates that their excuse is going to be, well, we've handed him over to God. We can't talk sense into him, so God's going to have to just deal with him. Verse 14, he has not directed his words against me, and I will not answer him with your speeches. So Elihu says, he hasn't said a thing to me or about me or against me, and I'm not going to be using your logic and your arguments. Verse 15, they are dismayed. They answer no more. They have not a word to say. And that's a description of the three friends. And shall I wait because they do not speak? Because they stand there and answer no more? I also will answer with my share, and I also will declare my opinion. I'm full of words. The spirit within me constrains me. Behold, my belly is like wine that has no vent, like new wineskins ready to burst. So he uses a simile here of his time period. They would take grape juice, brand new wine basically, and put it into a skin bag. And this would be a fresh skin bag. And so it would stretch as the wine fermented and made some gas. And so he says, I'm like a skin of wine that is ready to pop with all of the energy that's inside of it. He says, I have sat here and waited and waited and waited, and now I can't stand it any longer. I have to say something. Verse 20, I must speak that I may find relief. I must open my lips and answer. I will not show partiality to any man or use flattery toward any person, for I do not know how to flatter, else my maker would soon take me away. See, even though he's making claims that he's going to be able to help here, he's actually just showing that he is full of himself. He's full of hot air that needs to be expressed. He is all about being the guy that is in the right. And he's not going to come off very well. Verse 1 of chapter 33. But now, hear my speech, O Job. Listen to all my words. Behold, I open my mouth. The tongue in my mouth speaks. My words declare the uprightness of my heart, and what my lips know, they speak sincerely. The Spirit of God has made me, and the breath of the Almighty gives me life. So he's pumping the whole thing up here to basically, in his mind, leave Job no wiggle room. That effectively, I have thought this out, Job. I am getting stuff from God's wisdom in me, and now you need to pay attention and you need to take action based on what I say. Now, all of us, I'm afraid, have probably run across people who approach arguments like this, that they think they've got all of the answers to everything, and all that needs to happen is for us to listen to them. If it were true, if the person is wise, that would be great. But I have found more often than not, the people who really are wise don't go around talking about how wise they are. They don't pop off about their ability to speak on God's behalf. It reminds me of something in the Proverbs later, that let another's lips praise you and not your own. And so this guy is displaying a lot of dangerous signs of a self-righteous, self-wise person. Verse number 5, answer me if you can. Set your words in order before me. Take your stand. Behold, I am toward God as you are. I too was pinched off from a piece of clay. So that's a reference back to the creation of Adam, made out of the clay of the earth, the red dirt of the earth. Behold, no fear of me need terrify you. My pressure will not be heavy upon you. Surely you've spoken in my ears, and I've heard the sound of your words. You say, I am pure, without transgression. I am clean. There is no iniquity in me. So he repeats back to Job some of the claims that Job was making. Now, that was not a universal claim. And we should understand that. Job has never said, I am sinless. He has claimed the whole time, I haven't done anything to bring God's judgment on me. Which is true, and we know it's true because we know the backstory. We know that it is actually Satan that is pulling the strings here just to cause trouble. All right, back to what Elihu has to say. Verse 10. Behold, he finds occasion against me. He counts me as his enemy. He puts my feet in the stocks and watches all my paths. Now that's a rewording by Elihu of some of the things that Job has said. Job has assumed that the things happening to him are being done by God. And again, he is incorrect because he doesn't know the backstory. It is better for us to acknowledge that God gives permission for things to happen to us, rather than that to make the claim that he does all things to us. Because we do live in a fallen world, and free will choices of other people and other entities, in this case, Satan, can bring tough times against us. And God isn't actively doing that. And so we need to be better at expressing our understanding of how God acts in the universe. So Job is incorrect when he says that it's God that's doing it to him, and Elihu is actually calling him on that. Verse 12, "Behold, in this you are not right. I will answer you, for God is greater than man. Why do you contend against him, saying, he will answer none of man's words?" So why are you trying to bring God to court? And he uses some of Job's language. Job wanted to be able to bring the court case before God and get God to tell him why all this stuff is happening. And Elihu is correct when he says that God doesn't have to do that. "For God speaks in one way, and in two, though man does not perceive it, in a dream, in a vision of the night, when deep sleep falls on men, while they slumber in their beds, then he opens the ears of men and terrifies them with warnings, that he may turn man aside from his deed and conceal pride for a man." So he is describing here the giving of supernatural dreams, which we know does occur. Not all dreams come from God. Some dreams are just us working things out while we're asleep, or perhaps some sort of physical response to something we've eaten or some physical ailment we have. Some dreams are just dreams, all right? But he's talking about the supernatural dreams that are prophetic in nature to help men realize they need to take certain actions or quit taking certain actions. Verse 17, "that he may turn man aside from his deed, conceal pride from a man. He keeps back his soul from the pit, his life from perishing by the sword." So the reason for the supernatural dream sometimes is to help people not get themselves in eternal trouble or even into physical death trouble. Verse 19, "man is also rebuked with pain on his bed and with continual strife in his bones, so that his life loathes bread and his appetite choicest food. His flesh is so wasted away that it cannot be seen, and his bones that are not seen stick out." So this is the other thing he says. First of all, God can sometimes use dreams to warn us about stuff. And other times he uses physical issues to warn us about things. And we know that both of these are true, but it is not a universal thing. And we've got to be cautious of that. All sickness comes because of sin, because Adam and Eve's sin brought sickness into the world. But not all of our sicknesses are because of our sin. Sometimes it's just a sickness because we live in a fallen world. So this man, though, Elihu, is trying to say God does use dreams and sickness to change our direction when we're going the wrong way. And in some cases, he is correct. Verse 23, "if there be for him an angel, a messenger, a mediator, one of the thousand, to declare to man what is right for him, and he is merciful to him and says, deliver him from going down into the pit, I have found a ransom, then let his flesh become fresh with youth, let him return to the days of his youthful vigor. And then man prays to God and he accepts him, he sees his face with a shout of joy, and he restores to man his righteousness." So he's going down the same path that the others did. He's just using different words. He's saying God uses bad things in the life of sinful people to get their attention to the sin. And then, if you repent, he brings you up out of that again. He restores you back to your original joy. So it would appear that Elihu at least partially ascribes to that double-sided philosophy. Bad things only happen to bad people, and good things only happen to good people. So if bad things are happening to you, you're bad, and you need to repent so that you can become good, so that good things can happen to you again. So that's the philosophy that he's ascribing to. It's not different from what the other guys are saying. Continuing with that thought, verse 27, he sings before men and says, I sinned and perverted what was right, and it was not repaid to me. He has redeemed my soul from going down into the pit, and my life shall look upon the light. So after you repent and God takes you out of the bad stuff, then you can sing and talk about how marvelous it is to be back in good graces with God. Now, some of this seems very reasonable, but not as a universal principle. There are many people who have felt that God was dealing with them in the circumstances of their life, may have even sent them dreams of warning, and they repented, and their life changed around, and better things started happening, and so their testimony goes that direction. It says, I was bad, bad things were happening to me, I realized that God was calling for me to repent, so I repented, and now my life is better. And that's fine, but it is not the universal case in all circumstances that that's the way it happens. Verse 29, behold, God does all these things twice, three times with a man to bring back his soul from the pit that he may be lighted with the light of life. So he is asserting this is always the case, Job. The reason you need to repent is because bad things are happening to you and God is trying to get your attention and you need to change your heart so that you can get things better with him. Of course, he's wrong. That is not the reason these bad things are happening. Verse 31, pay attention, O Job, listen to me. Be silent and I will speak. If you have any words, answer me, speak, for I desire to justify you. So he's doing that thing where he's controlling. He says, you need to pay attention to me. No, don't talk to me yet. I'm not done telling you what you need to know. Now, what you need to do is you need to answer me with the correct words that I understand. I realize what I'm doing is wrong. I realize all this stuff is happening to me because I'm a sinner. I repent. See, that's what he's expecting, and he will accept nothing else. So he is very controlling. Verse 33, if not, listen to me, be silent, and I will teach you wisdom. So I'm trying to help you out here, guy. Don't blow me off. Chapter 34, he's not done. Then Elihu answered and said, hear my words, you wise men. Give ear to me, you who know. A little bit of a tongue-in-cheek sarcasm there. For the ear tastes words as the palate tastes food. Kind of interesting imagery. Let us choose what is right. Let us know among ourselves what is good. That's good advice. We need to test all things, cling to that which is good, and eschew or stay away from that things which are evil. That's a New Testament principle. It's actually Old Testament. For Job has said, I am in the right, and God has taken away my right. In spite of my right, I am counted a liar. My wound is incurable, though I am without transgression. So those are all quotes or rephrasing in Elihu's words what Job is claiming. I have done nothing wrong, and yet I'm being mistreated by God. Verse 7. What man is like Job, who drinks up scoffing like water? See, he's been taking everything that the three guys could throw at him, and it hasn't changed his mind. So that he's saying he just drinks up all that stuff like it's just normal water. who travels in company with evildoers and walks with wicked men. More of the accusation here. He accuses Job of doing evil and being the companion of evil people. And it's not true. Verse 9, for he has said, it profits a man nothing that he should take delight in God. Now, I don't remember Job ever saying anything like that, where it doesn't do you any good to be on God's side. Verse 10, therefore, hear me, you men of understanding. Far be it from God that he should do wickedness, and from the Almighty that he should do wrong. For according to the work of a man, he will repay him, and according to his ways, he will make it befall him. So he says, how dare Job suggest that God is doing wrong things? Of a truth, God will not do wickedly, and El Shaddai, or the Almighty, will not pervert justice, which is true. But he applies it incorrectly in Job's case. Who gave him charge over the earth, and who laid on him the whole world? If he should set his heart to it and gather to himself his spirit and his breath, all flesh would perish together, and man would return to dust. True. God could take out all the entire world in an instant if he wished. If you have understanding, hear this. Listen to what I say. Shall one who hates justice govern? Will you condemn him who is righteous and mighty, who says to a king, worthless one, and to nobles, wicked man, who shows no partiality to princes, nor regards the rich man more than the poor, for they are all the work of his hands. In a moment they die, at midnight the people are shaken and pass away, and the mighty are taken away by no human hand. So he is, as we wrap up today, basically saying God can do anything he wants to do, and he takes out bad people all the time, and there's nothing the bad people can do about it.